One Man, a Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, Claudia tunes up the second fiddle. Jack Barber, climbing the front steps to his sister Hazel's house, that overpowering concrete structure known in Whisper as Murray's Mortgage, finds the front door open and so goes into the vaulted entrance hall. It's late afternoon.
Hazel? Ben? Anybody home?
I'm in the den, Jack. I'm on the telephone.
I'll wait out here.
No, come on in. It's Del Mannington.
I'm sorry, Del. My brother Jack just came in. Hi, sit down anywhere.
Ask Jack if he remembers me.
Sure, I remember him. I remember every guy who ever used to call on Claudia. They were good for nickels if I'd leave the room.
Did you hear that?
Hazel, I'll be here at the Fairmont until Tuesday morning. Now, why don't you and your husband and Jack and his wife come and have dinner with me?
Did you say Claudia, too?
What? Oh, sure. Claudia, you know all of you.
We'll talk about it, Del. I'll call you. Have you tried to get Claude?
Nobody there but the housekeeper.
Well, try again, won't you? I'm sure she's on her way home by now, and thanks for calling. You're very good for my morale.
What's wrong with your morale?
Nothing now. Well, my brother's waiting patiently to talk to me.
I'll call you soon.
And you be sure to try Claude again.
Goodbye, Hazel. Sorry you're so busy. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Del.
Now, from here, if I'm not mistaken, it sounds like an out-and-out Claudia promotion.
Isn't it perfectly ridiculous? Why should Claudia's old beau suddenly decide he likes me 26 years later?
You want me to answer that?
No, please don't.
Okay. Tell me something.
Yes?
What did I say to you night before last?
Why?
Did you talk to Paul about something I said?
I'm sorry. I certainly shouldn't have discussed it with Paul. If I talked it over with anybody, it should have been Dan.
Well, what did I say? I'm sorry, Hazel. Paul razzed me a little, called me a coffee break psychoanalyst, said the world's full of them. And I couldn't even remember what I said.
I said it's no wonder Dan wanted a chain of stores and the biggest house in Seacliff, because I'd always run to Paul or Father with my troubles.
Oh.
I never nailed it on Dan. That's what you said, and I guess you were right.
But you didn't ask for all that advice, did you?
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't.
I can't imagine why I volunteered it either. I can remember thinking it, but I don't know why I happened to say it out loud.
You said it because you feel guilty. Now, I'll be a coffee break analyst myself.
Okay, fair enough. Why do I feel guilty?
Because you refuse to handle Dan's law business any longer. You feel guilty because he's in this horrible, horrible mess. And you're his brother-in-law, and you aren't helping one bit.
That's 1,000% wrong. I don't feel guilty at all.
Oh? Just plain hard-hearted.
Look, people get things half right. Now listen, Dan is in trouble, but I couldn't help him out. We're too conservative. He needs a lawyer who can see his way around the curves, Hazel. We're much too stuffy to be useful in any deals the late lamented Quade Duckworth put together. Don't you understand?
Oh, wow.
Yes, and that's why he's lucky to have Len Voigt. Len is a noble-hearted, honest fellow, which you might call a liberal. A last-ditch battler who can honestly convince himself that the end justifies the means. Conservatives can't do that, you see, Hazel. We live by the rules and we go down by the rules.
That's really very illuminating.
Good. I'm happy to clear it up. You don't need to explain it to Dan until the trouble's all over.
All right.
How is Dan? Any more lawsuits?
I haven't talked to him since he left for work this morning.
What's the matter?
Jack, I'm glad you said what you did say. Probably most of it was true.
Well, I didn't realize how harsh some of it sounded until I got it played back.
I may have failed Dan when the children were little, but he can count on me now. I'll promise you that. As soon as Father feels better, I'm going to talk to him about getting some of my own money out of the trust. And then I plan to pay off this mortgage myself. And
Hazel?
Well, come in, Claude. We're in the den.
Mrs. McCulloch says Joe Mannington has tried twice to get me on the phone. And
hi.
Oh, hello. Oh, hello, Jack. And before I call Del back, I want you to tell me if you had anything to do with it.
Excuse me, girl.
Oh, don't go, Jack.
Oh, I live with seven women. I know I'm in the powder room. I can feel it. Excuse me. I'll see you later.
Well, Hazel, anytime you want a little coffee break off the cuff analysis, come on over.
Goodbye, Jack. Thanks very much. No, Dennis, let's close this door.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family. Let's take a moment to think of the world we live in and just how small it really is. With modern transportation, traveling to almost any place in the world is only a matter of hours. Now, let's say that you're about to be stationed for the first time in the Panama Canal Zone. Once there, you'll find the Republic of Panama more intimately associated with the United States than any other country. You'll also find that nowhere abroad will you get in closer contact with the United States. North Americans have lived in the Canal Zone ever since it was acquired in May 1904. And you'll find thousands of your fellow countrymen, soldiers, sailors, and civilians, living and working in the zone much as they would at home. Why would you be stationed here? It would be to help protect one of the greatest engineering feats in history, the Panama Canal, which was finally dug and completed by the United States Army engineers and opened to navigation August 15, 1914, 10 years after our engineers took over the actual digging of the big ditch at a total cost of $380 million. Now, here is why the canal is so important. This narrow gateway between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans is kept open and maintained so that our Navy and merchant ships can pass quickly from ocean to ocean. This is a tremendous saving of time and money. Ships plowing the ocean waters between the Atlantic and Pacific coasts of the United States save 8,000 miles by going through the canal instead of around the southern tip of South America, where, incidentally, is some of the world's worst weather. Here's another thought to keep in mind. Whenever you leave the canal zone and enter Panama proper, you are under the laws and customs of Panama, not those of the United States. So respect these laws and customs to maintain the people's friendship. For remember, the only way to have a friend is to be one. Hazel closes the door, turns on a floor lamp, and finds her sister Claudia, feet widespread, arms folded, facing her.
Now then, Hazel, I want to know. What makes you think I'd ask Del to call you? Or that he'd take my advice if I did?
Because Dad said you reminded him to call me.
Father? Where was he?
Dad said Del called the house when you were over there, and you said for him to be sure to phone Claudia while he's in town.
Claude, he's lost your number.
He's had my number since the first time you wrote me. There isn't any doubt in his mind about where to find me. All he has to do is look it up. What else did you say?
He suggested a dinner. He wants Jack and Betty. He remembers Jack from when he used to give Jack nickels to stay out of the room. So he wants Jack and Betty and you and Nicky and Dan and me.
When?
Oh, sometime between now and Monday night.
Did you say we'd do it?
I said we'd talk it over or something. I couldn't tell him that Dan's in such an unholy mess he may not want to go anywhere or see anybody.
I don't want to be in a position of calling him back, that's all. I won't either. I won't call him.
You talk it over with Nicky and Jack and Betty, and I'll speak to Dan, and then I'll call Del, if you'd rather.
No, you manage it, huh?
Claude, you just asked me to.
I didn't mean that the way it sounded. I just meant he's my old friend, and the way it's worked out, you manage the dinner.
We're not going to quarrel about this, are we?
Hazel, I was trying to point out the irony.
I don't need it pointed out. I see it.
Honestly, I can't say anything right to anybody.
Apparently, I can't either. Claudia, our nerves are on edge around here. We're not quite responsible for what we do. Dad's been sued by all but four of the stores in the whole Duckworth chain because of something Duckworth did. And we're frantic, if you want to know the truth. So I don't care if we go to the dinner or don't go to the dinner. Or if we ever see Del again. I don't care.
I'm sorry, Hazel. I'm terribly sorry. I didn't realize things were so bad. Don't you bother to call him back. I will.
The Barbers in just a moment. With your permission, there's something I'd like to talk about for a minute. You know, too many times people try to escape from their responsibilities by having someone else take them over. There was Miles Standish, for example. He was much too busy to ask Priscilla to marry him, so he sent John Alden to pop the question for him. You know what happened. John ended up marrying the girl himself.
Of course, if John had had a face like a flat tire instead of being the handsome guy he was, maybe Miles Standish would have married Priscilla instead. Well, actually, I don't know what got me started on this subject, and unless it was my thinking about people who represent somebody else. Take our State Department, for example. Being a representative is one of its biggest jobs. Through the Foreign Service, it helps the Justice and Treasury Departments handle immigration, narcotics, and quarantine problems. And the Secretaries of Agriculture and Commerce look to the Secretary of State to help keep their fingers on the pulse of foreign markets so they can keep the business firms and farmers of America informed on matters of import and export. I guess the only connection between these facts and the courtship of Miles Standish is that, like John Alden, our State Department speaks for itself.
A little later, Claudia, back at her own house, locks her bedroom door, throws her jacket on the bed, takes up the telephone, and makes herself comfortable on the chaise longue before she dials.
Mr. John Anderson, please. This is Nicholas Lacey calling.
Yes?
Hello, Del.
Hazel. Glad you called me back. Have you talked to Dan?
Del, this is Claudia.
What? Oh, Claudia. Good, good. I tried to get you twice this afternoon. Hazel said to be sure to check with you on the plans for the dinner.
That was terribly sweet of Hazel.
I'd lost your number, and she asked if I got you, and I told her no, so I called a couple of times, but you weren't there. Where were you, out shopping?
As a matter of fact, I was at the library reading a book.
Good for you. What book?
Well, that's a joke, Del. You know I can't read.
Oh, Claude. You don't need to read. You're the girl who made time stand still. I was telling them about you down in Pasadena. I said I knew a woman who lived outside our concept of time. Now, how's about it? When will we have dinner? I'm free till Tuesday morning, so, when? When will Hazel and Dan be free and, your husband?
I...
Claudia.
Oh, that phone, Mr. Hamilton. I never want to see you again as long as I live. Never, never, never.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse, and features J. Anthony Smythe, Bernice Berwin, Paige Gilman, Russell Thorson, and Mary Adams. In Chapter 36, Book 130, After Dinner with the After Dinner Speaker, Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.